Let's start first with, can you give the American people some idea on how bad it is because of this revolution that we supported with the Muslim Brotherhood?
Sure, Glenn. Basically, what's happened to Egypt since post-Arab Spring, as it was fondly called, has seen a nosedive in their human rights all throughout Egypt. Most recently, even before, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood takeover, churches were constantly being attacked, burned down. Coptic girls are frequently raped and abducted and forced to convert, and all sorts of different patterns
have been happening
in Egypt. But
Can you explain what it means when you say they're raped and forced to convert? Can you explain what that means in Egypt?
What that means is that because they're a vulnerable minority, the Christian Copts in Egypt, they are frequently targeted in different ways to, especially young girls, to somehow be brought into the fold of Islam. That could be done on different levels. It could be in the most basic rape. She's actually abducted, raped, and then shamed and told that if your family finds out, they'll disown you and now you have to be a Muslim, or she may even be impregnated. And of course, the son of a Muslim or the child of a Muslim is a Muslim, and then she becomes part of this. Other times, friends, Muslim friends, trick them into it, drug them, and then they're abducted and they wake up and they find themselves in a different setting and most recently one girl who's 12 years old was actually, this happened to her, and then they sent her to Libya because of course Libya post Arab Spring is another hotbed of Christian persecution. So really what's happened, it's taken a nosedive to the worse, and one of the best examples happened very recently, which was the attack on the Coptic Cathedral, the St. Mark Cathedral, which is really the holiest site for all Coptic Christians. We're talking millions of people, in fact for many Orthodox too, Eastern Orthodox like Ethiopians. And under Mubarak, at least this cathedral was respected. And, you know, as one activist I was watching on an Arabic program said, not even a pebble was ever thrown towards it. But recently, after Muslims went on a riot and killed Christians, again, it was based on the context of they were sexually harassing young Christian girls, and men, Coptic men, retaliated. There was a fight. Some died. Most of them who died were Christians. Then they tried to bury the Christians in the St. Mark Cathedral, or they had their funeral. And as they went out, the Copts in mass were, of course, angry. But then all of a sudden, large groups of Muslims started hurling rocks at them, Molotov cocktails. And basically, this holiest site of Coptic Orthodox Christianity was under siege. And what's worse, it wasn't just the mobs. You have pictures and videos of the mobs doing all this. In fact, with rifles, climbing atop the roof of adjacent buildings of the cathedral and opening fire on it. And then you have right next to them the Egyptian state security standing by. And you have videos of this, you have photos of it. And then, of course, the state security itself started hurling tear gas canisters, and it got maybe over 50, 60 cops sick that had to be taken out. So things have tremendously taken a turn for the worse in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood,
okay.
The rise there. But
Tell me why the media doesn't cover, because they're going to immediately say that we as a network are blowing things out of proportion, we're taking just a few things. We send our people into danger into Egypt to cover this story. Any of them would have been killed. Any of the people who were part of this interview could have been killed for talking to us. Tell me why this is not being covered by the media.
Certainly. Because in my opinion, the phenomena of Christian persecution under Islam is the Achilles heel to both Islam's image in the West and to the mainstream liberal media's narrative. And what I mean by that is the media has no problem covering angry Muslims shooting rockets into Israel, even if those Muslims articulate it through Islamic paradigms or screaming Allahu Akbar and things like that. The media has no problem showing the same patterns in, let's say, Europe, in France, Muslims rioting, burning cars, doing this and that. And the reason for that is because the media will immediately portray such Muslims as the underdogs, and Americans have a thing for underdogs. We side with underdogs, we sympathize. So if these underdogs are acting violent and wild and going crazy, well, that's of course because they're oppressed in Israel, that's because they're oppressed in Europe, that's because they're oppressed everywhere. Now, if you come to this issue of Christian persecution under Islam, these arguments no longer work. For now what you have is, now Muslims are the dominant ones, let's say in Egypt, Here they're the majority. Christians are an ostracized, politically ostracized group, which is very small, and all they, and they're the same race, same names, same language, same ethnicity. So there's absolutely nothing to distinguish an Egyptian Copt from an Egyptian Muslim. And yet they are under attack. Their churches are burned, their women are abducted, etc., etc. So the mainstream media narrative of Muslim grievance is what fuels Muslim violence, which works so well when you're talking about Israel. And the West simply doesn't work in this aspect, because now this is pure religious hostility. There's no way to justify it. It doesn't make sense. Why are they attacking an outnumbered minority?
Tell me what the conditions of Omar are.
The conditions of Omar, and I'm glad you asked about this. It's a arcane, little-known text, even by Arabists and Islamic scholars, which is attributed to the second caliph, Omar, of the 7th century. And under him were the greatest waves of jihads and Arab conquests of so many lands, including Egypt. And what they were is, it was a pact that he made with conquered Christians in Syria. It may actually even be in Jerusalem. And it just lists the sorts of things that they, as Christians, as non-Muslims, must adhere to, conditions. And all of these conditions are, of course, from a modern humanitarian standpoint, a travesty. Basically, a Christian can't build a new church, they can't repair an old one, they can't sing too loudly during Mass, they can't display a cross or a Bible anywhere near a Muslim. If a Muslim wants their seat, the Christian has to rise up. Christians can't wear the same outfits. They have to wear clothes that makes them look humiliating and distinguishes them. And now, why this is very important is because when you look at it and you look at what's happening to the Copts, and you look at what's happening to actually Christians from one end of the Muslim world to the other, from Morocco in the west to Indonesia in the east to sub-Saharan Africa to Turkey and Central Asia, you'll find that the conditions of Omar and all those stipulations are actually being expected of Christians and being pushed on them. And so churches are bombed. In Egypt, believe it or not, in Egypt there was a church there which already exists. They simply wanted a permit to repair the toilet. And of course, because the conditions of Omar say you can't repair a church because we're waiting for it to just die by itself. They didn't get a permit. They ended up fixing it. And next thing you know, state security came, destroyed the toilet, beat up the priest, and arrested them. And so these conditions are alive and well today. And further to that is, aside from what I said about what's Christians, what's really important about the book Crucified Again is it's really a microcosm of what happens to non-Muslims who live under Muslim authority. And so what I'm describing here, rest assured, this is what's in store for anyone who comes under this sort of authority.
Raymond, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time. We'll speak again. It's important for you to know that tonight at 8 o'clock we're running For the Record, and this is only half the show. We're going to show you something else that's happening right here in our own country, and we'll get to that next. But it is important for you to call your pastor, your priest, and your rabbi, and that you watch as a Christian, because Christians are being persecuted now. And it is not just happening in Egypt. Let me give you just the countries. Egypt, Nigeria, Somalia, Sudan, Kenya, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Iran, Turkey, Libya, Central Asia. It's happening all over. And we can no longer turn a blind eye to the Muslim Brotherhood and the disease that it brings into all countries that it infects. It has infected ours at the highest levels. You need to be aware. Tonight at 8 o'clock, For the Record.
All right, my poor guest has had to live through all of this, but he has written a very important book on a subject that is staggeringly uncovered in the West. I don't know what's the bigger story. What he is reporting and what I report semi-regularly on my own show, I am proud, though unhappy to say, or the lack of anger and the lack of reporting and the lack of acknowledgement of this issue in the Western world. And the issue is the war on Christians in the Muslim world today. And the only axe I have to grind on this as a Jew is that I care about this morally. So I don't have a theological axe to grind, as you might think, when this is raised. But it angers me tremendously that it is not reported. He does. He is Raymond Ibrahim, and his book is Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It's published by Regnery, and you should see the endorsements pages of people that I respect endorsing the importance of this book. Victor Davis Hanson is on top. He is Ibrahim is a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and has written widely. Mr. Ibrahim, welcome back to the Dennis Prager Show.
Hello, Dennis. Thanks for having me. Happy to be with you.
I appreciate that. Tell us a drop about your own background.
Sure. My parents were Egyptian cops, Christian cops from Egypt who emigrated from there to the United States in the late 60s, and I was born and raised here, but I grew up bilingual, you can almost say bicultural, that is to say, very familiar of the Middle Eastern mentality and the Middle Eastern worldview, and also the American one, naturally. And so I've always had an interest in, my lineage, my heritage, my background, even ever since I was a little child. And I majored it, on a more academic level. I studied it in college, including with Victor Davis Hanson. My MA thesis was actually one of the earliest battles between Christendom and Islam in the year 636, the Battle of Yarmouk. And then I went on to Georgetown University's Center of Contemporary Arab Studies in D.C., studied a little bit there, worked at the Library of Congress Near East Section, which is where I actually discovered these tracts about written in Arabic from Al-Qaeda that ended up translating into the Al-Qaeda Reader, and I spoke to you about it several years ago.
That's right. That's why I said welcome back, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And then after that, I went on and became Associate Director of the Middle East Forum, and then basically I resigned from those jobs that had administrative aspects, and now I'm a Shulman Fellow at the Horowitz Center, where I just focus exclusively on writing. So, from a personal and professional background, I have a long, history with the Middle East and the Islamic world, and, of course, this issue, which is...
When were you last in Egypt?
I try not to talk too much about that, but it was a few years ago, because I try, it's kind of for security reasons.
Naturally, I understand.
Yes.
What is your sense, because I want to, obviously we're going to talk about the larger issue of Christians in the Muslim world today, but what is your sense right now about the Copts in Egypt?
They're just kind of between a rock and a hard place. It's their indigenous land. It's funny, because a lot of people ask me, and they say, well, the Copts, what are they doing there? It's a Muslim country. Why don't they leave? And most people, of course, are unaware that the Copts are the indigenous inhabitants of Egypt that were there centuries before Islam came in with the sword and conquered it. So on the one hand, it's their homeland. They love it. They don't want to leave. Up until, recently, a few generations ago, things were actually pretty decent for them before the rise of radicalism, et cetera, in the 60s and 70s. And now, it's taken a big turn. Now you have, it's amazing, to us when we say the Muslim Brotherhood is the president's Muslim Brotherhood leader and the Muslim Brotherhood's infiltrated the government, etc. This is a group that less than a century ago was just banned everywhere in Egypt. The government didn't want anything to do with it. Cops were terrified of it. And now all of a sudden, it's being described as a largely secular group by the Obama administration. And they're in charge. And, these are people who decades ago, had fatwas or Islamic decrees saying that churches in Egypt should be destroyed and, a Christian can't bury their dead among a Muslim grave. And all these, of course, are stipulations that are in Islamic law. So the situation is just getting really worse and worse, because now you got it's gone from mob attacks and illegal attacks on churches where when you had the Mubarak government, which were at least, they happened, but now it's gone to legal things. So, for example, now that you got the Brotherhood and the Salafis, these are the guys that were in jail because of their radical views. Now that you have these guys in power, the cops are being even persecuted on a legal level. And the most obvious aspect of this is the rise in blasphemy cases, whereby any Christian who just says anything that can be misconstrued as offensive to Muhammad or to Islam is immediately thrown in jail. And so that has taken a dramatic rise since the revolution and the Muslim Brotherhood takeover, where you have so many Christians now languishing in jail just because of some accusation. The most recent case is a teacher, a young Coptic Christian female teacher, who, because some 10-year-old student said she looked disgusted when talking about Islam in her history courses, is now facing jail and traumatized, and this just came out a few days ago, I think, on Fox News. So the situation has really taken a bad nosedive for them.
Are any Muslims there ever arrested for looking disgusted when talking about Christians or Jews?
No.
So the arrest
for
looking
often.
Yes, yeah, to say the least.
Yes.
So arrest for looking disgusted only applies in one direction.
Right, exactly. It applies to the, you know, the dhimmis are basically...
Yeah, the dhimmis, that's
who
right.
Who should be thankful to be alive in Egypt.
That's
and
right.
So when they make one wrong move, then they get attacked.
Yeah, well, you and I are dhimmis.
Yeah.
So let's delineate. There are two aspects, really, to your book. The historical issue of Islam and Christianity and the contemporary persecution, correct?
Correct.
Right. So we'll talk about both, but on the contemporary, off the top of my head, I think of Christians in Pakistan, Christians in Nigeria, Christians in Iraq, Christians in Egypt. Where else?
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up, Dennis. It's basically, and this is a theme I try to drive home, you're going to see the same patterns of Christian persecution, whether it's attacks on churches, whether it's attacks on, like we mentioned, blasphemers, whether it's attacks on Muslims who want to become Christians and now they're apostates, whether it's attacks on Christian women who are just seen as subhuman and can just be taken, raped, killed, forced to convert. You're going to see this from the Arab world. You're going to see this in sub-Saharan Africa, in Nigeria, in Somalia, in Sudan, in Uganda. You're going to see this in East Asia, in Indonesia, in the Philippines. You're going to see this in Central Asia, in, you know, Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, Turkey, of course, Iran. So
I don't think people realize how widespread Christians are in that world. Crucified again, A. Raymond Ibrahim. Back in a moment. I've been further reading the book during the break, and it's quite compelling. And there really, I said there were two themes. There were really three themes. The book is Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. We have to, the issue is the war and the new. Those are the two of the book. But there is a third issue, and that is the ignoring of what is happening to Christians in the Muslim world by the world. You want to comment on that, Raymond Ibrahim?
Sure. As you know, you were pointing out earlier, in many respects, this issue of Christian suffering all throughout the Islamic world is in many ways really the human rights crisis of our day, and yet it's the one that you've probably never heard of. And of course, as you were pointing out, so why is that? And there's several reasons, I think, for that. One is, I believe, that in many ways, this is the Achilles heel to Islam's image in the West. And the reason I say that is because When Muslims or Islamic radicals attack, let's say, Israel, and they articulate their rage in, you know, Islamic paradigms, it's about reconquering our land, and this is the Ummah, et cetera, and they call for jihad, it's not a problem for the mainstream media to report on it, because in the end they're just going to say, well, look, they're the frustrated, disempowered underdogs, and they're fighting the stronger state, Israel. So, of course, they have grievances, they're lashing out, they're frustrated, and, you know, of course, they're going to just do what they have to do. And it's the same issue when they attack the West. You know, the West is stronger, so even 9/11 was articulated as, oh, this is a product of grievance, and, you know, Muslims are lashing out, et cetera, and terrorism is the weapon of the weak, and so on. But when you come to this issue of Muslims attacking Christians, you can't use these arguments anymore, because what you have is the exact opposite. Now, we're talking about Muslim lands where Muslims are in majority, Muslims are in government, Muslims are in authority, disenfranchised, politically disenfranchised, and ostracized Christian minorities are simply trying to go to church and to be Christians, and they are being attacked ruthlessly for it. And at the same time, these Christians are of the same race, ethnicity, culture, they have the same names, they speak the same languages. For example, in Egypt, you know, the Copts and the Muslims, they're virtually you can't distinguish them except for the fact that one is Christian and one is Muslim. So it becomes very clear that the hostility is purely religious-based. It's nothing, it's not tolerance.
Right, so the silence of the world, and again, I'm dividing this silence, and I want to challenge you on this. One is the world's media and the UN, which I expect because they have to portray Muslims only in a victim way. Understood, and they're not exactly pro-Christian to begin with.
Right.
But the other is, and I've raised this my whole life, when very, very young, and I worked on Soviet Jewry, and I asked Christians why they weren't working on Soviet Christians. So again, and I have my own theories, why are the churches not speaking out?
My theory is that, to a great extent, modern-day liberal Christianity in the West, which I think is the main manifestation of Christianity in the West, is part and parcel a product of Western leftist secular culture. And what I mean by that is they imbibe the same teachings, the same propaganda that's propagated by the mainstream media. They go to the same schools where, you know, they're taught that, you know, if anything, Christian civilization is the source of all woes. The Crusades, which are completely distorted to look like evil white Christian imperialists out to capitalize and make money by, you know, attacking Muslims without, of course, telling anyone that it was Muslim centuries earlier who took Christian lands. So I think they're very much just like your average Western leftist who just gets the same message. And so in their mind, even subconsciously, if you will, they try to disassociate themselves from historic Christianity. And it's much more popular to be to care about the human rights of anyone and everyone but Christians. And even Christians, leftist liberal Christians, think the same way. They'd rather talk about, you know, Tibetan human rights than fellow Christians, because we've all been taught that if anything, Christians are the attackers. They're the bad guys. They don't suffer.
Well,
so that's one theory.
Yeah, okay, you have another one?
The other theory, of course, is just they don't know. For instance, I read one report that said, I think up to 75% of pastors do not want to talk about this issue, even though there's a greater number of...
Well, they'll be accused of Islamophobia.
Exactly.
And as I've said so often to my listeners, the rarest of all the good human traits is courage. And it takes courage to say what you're saying. In fact, it takes courage to say what I'm saying. Because, interestingly, there is no term for hatred of Christianity. Why isn't there's a term anti-Semitism, there is a term Islamophobia, but there is no term for hatred of Christianity.
Exactly. I mean, you're mentioning this is the crux of the issue. Why including from Christians? And it is mind-boggling. I myself have no simple answer. I have these, you know, various theories. But, you know, and then there's the idea, for instance, I'll read from Western Christians who finally become acquainted with what's happening, and then they start saying things, well, you know, our radical love will turn all evil away, and we must turn the other cheek, which is so easy to say in America, to say that to a Christian in the Islamic world. But, you know,
you're not turning your other cheek. You're turning the Christian in Nigeria's other
exactly,
cheek.
Exactly, and it gets torn off, basically.
Yes, exactly.
And
can you explain to me the solidarity that Palestinian Christians are showing to Palestinian Muslims?
You know, I get mixed information on that. So, for instance, I think one of the mainstream narratives is what you just indicated, that there's, you know, great solidarity, et cetera, but when I talk to people who are, you know, intimately acquainted with that area, I get a different message. I get a message of basically Christians there are being... There was a report just a few months ago, and it's in the book, of how in Palestine, Gaza, actually, Christians are being forced to convert to Islam. Christians are fleeing the country. I mean, the birthplace of Christianity, which had a huge Christian population, is down to maybe not even 5%. And so there's really a different story going on there, and it's a story that fits the rest of the paradigm that I discuss in the book, which is happening all around the Islamic world. And then you get this other narrative, you know, of, well, actually, they're all working together, and, you know, and they're both being attacked, and they're both suffering, et cetera, et cetera. So it really depends who you're going to listen to and who's giving you the authentic truth. And, of course, I don't really... I mean, to say that there are, remember, just using the word Christian, I mean, you can be, there's Christian sellouts, just like there's Muslim sellouts and Jewish sellouts, people who actually help the other side, but they're called, you know, they have the name of that
religion. Well, I will do a part two with you to show the parts of your book that deal with historic Muslim treatment of Christians, not just contemporary. The book is Victims of Jihad, Crucified Again. That's not the book. That is the it's a subtitle. Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Raymond Ibrahim, it is always enlightening to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
You're very welcome.